Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, and the best insight analysis on all the subjects that you're talking about in football. I'm Ian McGarry, and joining me as ever is Duncan Castles. We've got a great podcast here ahead of you, because we're joined as well later in this particular podcast by very, very, very interesting guest, which I'm sure you will all be pleased to hear from, which is Glenn Murray, Brighton Hove and Albion striker, and someone who can bring us an insight into what it's like when a manager and a player don't quite get on, or indeed a manager and a dressing room don't quite get on. But first of all, we head to Tottenham Hotspur, where, funnily enough, the manager and the dressing room seem to be at odds. Duncan, Mauricio Pochettino has suffered a few setbacks, to say the least, in the start of this season. None more so in terms of intensity than the 7-2 defeat by Bayern Munich in the Champions League. And you have interesting news with regards to what he's doing after this round of Premier League games with regards to meeting some influential people.
Yes, this is a trip that Pochettino is making to Qatar next week to take part in something that's called the Aspire Global Summit, which is a annual conference that is funded by the Qatar royal family through their Aspire Academy in Doha, where they gather senior influencers in football together and encourage them to chat to each other and exchange ideas. And they have what they call star chats, which I believe Pochettino will be giving one of those at the conference. And I think the most interesting thing about this from a Tottenham Hotspur perspective is that it obviously gives Pochettino the opportunity to spend some time with the owners and the people who run Paris Saint-Germain, a club who have been interested in Pochettino as a candidate to coach them for some time, a club who are usually not reticent about changing coaches, a club who are considered to be one of the big name outfits in European football, where a major coaching job could open up according to results this season. Thomas Tuchel is there. We went through a good part of last season discussing whether he was going to remain in situ. On the Transfer Podcast, we told you quite early on that the Emir of Qatar had decided he was going to keep faith in Tuchel and give him a second season, when many people were reporting that it was going to be over for him. However, there is definitely a question mark whether that patience will run through another campaign should Tuchel have problems with the dressing room. And remember, he's still stuck with Neymar. I have difficult results, and he's done well in his first two Champions League games, obviously a very convincing win over Real Madrid, albeit some of the gloss was taken off that when Club Brugge went to Madrid and went 2-0 up against Zinedine Zidane's team this week, and probably would have won the game if it wasn't for a quite bizarre offside call that went in Sergio Ramos's favour, despite looking like it was still offside when VAR had examined it. Tuchel's had two defeats already in the French league to fairly minor clubs in Rennes and Reims. And it's just a point ahead in the division, which will have to be remedied and probably will be remedied because he has such huge advantages in terms of player resources. But I think, and talking to people involved in the organisation of the summit, that Pochettino has a kind of dual aim in going there. And we know that Pochettino has been looking at his options for some time now. We know he wanted to go to Real Madrid over a year ago and Daniel Levy wouldn't let him go. We know he was a candidate for the Manchester United job when Louis van Gaal was dismissed and essentially passed on the opportunity to pursue his interest in Manchester United at that time. So I don't think any of this this has been a difficult season to be a Tottenham Hotspur supporter, because what was such a fine finish to last season in terms of getting to that Champions League final and a lot of hope when they became the highest spending club in the summer transfer window, invested more gross than any other Premier League team in improving their squad, has turned into this situation where they have just 3 wins in 10 games so far this season, and as you say, their worst European defeat in the club's history against Bayern at home in the brand new, very impressive naming rights lane, which Serge Gnabry seemed to enjoy more than any of the Tottenham players or Tottenham supporters that night.
I think it's interesting as well, Duncan, that the situation regarding Pochettino has changed dramatically in the last 6 months. We reported repeatedly on this podcast that he was the preferred candidate for both Manchester United and for Real Madrid. And then circumstances, let's just say, conspired to see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer appointed at Old Trafford. And obviously the return of Zinedine Zidane to Santiago Bernabeu. Now, Pochettino, I suspect, and I've heard from people close to him, feels a little bit disenfranchised by those circumstances, because he always felt that whatever happened to him at the end of last season, which of course was a defeat in the Champions League final by Liverpool in Madrid, that he would have an option to go somewhere else. And he didn't get that option. Now, I think it's very interesting that PSG, and as you said, the Qatari owners, have made this invite to Pochettino to come out during the international break and speak to him as well about the project that they have. Whether it's PSG, whether it's the Qatar national team, we know that this is a very, very influential and important part of the modern football culture with regards to what they can offer, both financially, but also as a project to a coach like Pochettino. So it will be, I think, extremely interesting with regards to what happens the next few weeks with Pochettino and Spurs, because as we reported in the podcast last week, the Tottenham players are perplexed about his attitude with regards to how things are going this season. That's not obviously been helped by the 7-2 defeat by Bayern Munich. And also, there is a question now as to whether or not Pochettino himself sees a future at White Hart Lane, naming rights stadium, as you call it, Duncan, with regards to going forward. So it really is in the mix, I think, now. And a very, very interesting situation that we have developing.
An additional bit of information on this conference in Doha. Jose Mourinho was invited to attend the same summit that Pochettino is attending and turned down the invitation. I think that might not be unconnected with what we've been reporting on the podcast about Real Madrid and his readiness to take over there and the problems that Florentino Perez has been having with Zidane and his, as president's, preparations to change coach in, well, we'll see how the timing develops. But as we've said on here previously, very influential people at Madrid believe that Zidane's time is limited, and certainly results like he had in the Champions League in midweek are not going to extend and give him a longer deadline as being the Santiago Bernabeu manager.
Pep Guardiola this week, Duncan, has been talking about his disappointment that every time he doesn't select Phil Foden to play makes him feel sad. And I think the exact quote was he would be on the floor with Foden when he was not selected for a game. Now, interesting, Gabriel Jesus, a player who has absolutely proven himself for Manchester City, but at the same time is still definitely a number two, if not number three, striker for the Premier League champions. He must, I suspect, feel like his quality and his value may be elsewhere. And I understand that you have some information regarding Jesus with regards to what he feels about himself and also about where his future might lie as well.
Yes. Well, you've got the Brazil international striker there, the man who was the starting number nine for Brazil at the World Cup. 17 goals in 35 games for Brazil. Still an early stage of his career. Just looking at his performances for Manchester City, without ever consistently being first choice and a guaranteed starter for them, 49 goals in 108 games and 17 assists, which is, you know, good numbers, albeit in a very high-scoring team, it's still solid, solid numbers. This season, 4 goals in 450 minutes on the pitch. There was a story in German press this week that Manchester City had offered Jesus to Bayern Munich as an alternative to Leroy Sané to try and kind of ward them away from taking Sané away from them and take them out of their attack and allow them an opportunity or convince Sané to sign a longer contract. That's again a story we broke on the Transfer Window podcast many months ago was of Bayern Munich's interest in taking Sané and also of the problems Manchester City were having in extending his contract. What I can tell you is that during the summer, Manchester City were prepared to sell Jesus. They had an offer for the player from Borussia Dortmund, which the Brazilian examined and considered and eventually decided that it wasn't the right club for him to go to, so stopped that deal from going through. They also offered, I'm told, Jesus to Juventus at one point during the summer while they were involved in negotiations for Jean Cancelo. And proposed that as a solution with instead of them paying money and Danilo going the other way, the idea would have been that they got Cancelo with some additional cash from Juventus for Gabriel Jesus. Juventus didn't want to do it. That fell through. From what I am told, that failure to move Jesus off their books stopped Manchester City from completing a deal for Jean Felix. Talking to people close to Felix, they say that City basically had everything in place to sign the Portuguese forward, but they couldn't do it because of the financing, and they needed Jesus, the money from his transfer and the wage bill that would open up to be able to complete the deal. So I think you put all of that together and you have to come to the conclusion that this is a player, a potential transfer that you want to be monitoring, because you've got a forward of real talent who has demonstrated track record at international football, demonstrated track record in European football, but can't get a place in the team as much as he would like to have, simply because one of the best strikers Premier League history is ahead of him and has convinced Pep Guardiola that he should be first choice. And remember, when Jesus was signed, that was a period in which Guardiola actually wanted to sell Aguero. He felt that Aguero didn't do enough in terms of the total contribution to the team, in terms of following his tactical instruction and getting involved in chasing opposition players down and engaging in tactical fouling, and therefore wanted Aguero to leave. And I'm told that basically the club had to come to Guardiola and say, please, please find a way to keep Aguero in the team. We do not want to sell this player. He's a hero of the fans. We don't normally advise you on what to do with players. We usually give you what you want in terms of restructuring the team. But in this case, try and work out a solution. And I think they also worked with Aguero as well to get him and explain to him that if he wanted to stay, he had to do more of what Guardiola was asking him to do. That has been achieved, and the fall guy has been Jesus, who was purchased on Guardiola's recommendation with the idea that he would be Aguero's successor. But that promotion path, I think it's probably more obscured than it's ever been for him.
As we promised you at the top of the podcast, we're now joined by Brent Hove Albion striker and general Premier League legend, Glenn Murray, it has to be said, who's going to give us a little bit of a rundown on things that have been happening this week in football, as well as preview the games in this weekend. Glenn, Brent Hove Albion have got a big game against Tottenham Hotspur. They had a very, very big loss to Bayern Munich in the Champions League. What's the state of mind with regards to Brighton going into this game at home against a Tottenham team who have been beaten 7-2 and who are obviously going through a bit of a tough time at this moment?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me on the podcast. And I'm not sure about the introduction, the legendary status, but I will take it.
Oh, no, legend, always legend.
No, listen, going into Spurs this weekend, obviously they've made the headlines with their European exploits and getting a heavy defeat. I think it's the heaviest at home in Europe. But do you know what? It's a bit cliche. I mean, we are just concentrating ourselves. It's a tough game. Take nothing away from Tottenham. It's one very bad result for them, but they've got the players and the talent to turn it around in a heartbeat. And we don't want to help them do that. We're going into the game concentrating ourselves and trying to see which is the best way we can impose ourselves on them on the afternoon and try and take some points out of the game.
You're a very experienced guy, Glenn, in terms of your football career and what you've come up against and what you've achieved in that career as well. I get what you're saying about it being cliched with regards to you've got to be wise to what Tottenham might respond to the Bayern Munich defeat. But I'm guessing there must be a kind of a sense of, ability or hope to exploit the same things that Bayern Munich did. Brighton aren't Bayern Munich, that's for sure. But at the same time, you have you know, tactical analysis, et cetera, et cetera. You yourself are a student of the game. You watch those games and you think, well, you know, where are those weaknesses which were exploited by Bayern are able to be exploited again?
Yeah, I mean, definitely that's what we've got people at the club for. Like you mentioned there, our analysts, our coaching staff, and us as players, we're all working as one to try to go about hurting Spurs the best way we can. Obviously, we've seen a good example of that on Tuesday night against Bayern. But listen, Spurs are going to come back fighting. They're not going to roll over for anyone. So we know we need to be on our on top of our games to get anything out of the fixture. And listen, they will have also analysed the game, and I'm sure they've got lots of staff in that sort of department on how to stop us and how to strengthen those frailties that we've seen on Tuesday.
Well, take it away from Tottenham and just extrapolate it generally. You know, we talk in football about managers struggling with the dressing room, or the dressing room sometimes changing. It's getting bored of a manager, getting bored of working the same way with a coach, and it seems it's quite difficult to turn those situations around, in particularly in modern football where there is a rapid turnover of coaches. What's your experience of that as a player in terms of a point? Is there an obvious point where things go wrong, even when it's been working well with a manager for a period of time? Is it easy for you to tell that?
It's a really difficult question to answer. But yeah, I think we've seen it. Is it 3 or 4 years ago, maybe even longer now, with Mourinho at Chelsea, where he'd had successful times at the club, and the players just seemed to go a bit sour, and he ended up leaving. But yeah, I have been in dressing rooms where that has happened. Not generally where the manager has done fantastically well. More so where things have been okay and then gone downhill from there. And sort of there becomes a little bit of chatter and things like that. And maybe a few lads are unhappy, and that spreads throughout the squad. And obviously, when results aren't going our way or the club's way, people tend to look for scapegoats. And sometimes that can be the manager. I mean, on many occasions. For me, Pochettino's got a group of players that want to play for him and have been very successful for him.
How difficult is it, Glenn? And again, I'm not talking about Spurs specifically here, just in your experience. You've had a long career in the top flight of football. But when a relationship sours, if it's with one player or with many players in the dressing room, how difficult is that to repair?
Yeah, I mean, I think quite often we see it's irreparable. And obviously players and managers at this level have got egos, and they believe in what they're doing and how to do it. Obviously, you need to be strong-minded to be a manager. It's a case of, for me, being a top-class manager, half the battle is keeping 25 to 30 very wealthy footballers on side. And if you can get that togetherness and that feeling of all 25, and I'm not just talking about the 11 that are starting or the 13 that are featuring often. I'm talking about all 25 members of your squad, your training squad, day in, day out, pulling in the same direction. And lads who may be sitting in the stand on a Saturday for whatever reason, putting in at training and pushing those lads in the 18 for a place on the bench, and the lads in the 18 pushing the 11 for a place on the pitch. And I think if you can get that harmonious spirit in your group, then you're halfway there to being a successful manager.
Who have you worked with, Glenn, who's been particularly good at that?
I tell a story about Tony Pulis, and we were at Crystal Palace at the time, obviously, and things weren't going perfectly. We were struggling. It was sort of coming up to the sort of probably the last quarter of the season, And he made a big change, and he said that all 25 will travel home and away. Now, this could have went one or two ways, really, because obviously we had some elder pros and some very good pros at that time. One that springs to mind is Breda Hangeland. And I mean, these lads, let's put it this way, it's not normal in football for 25 men to be travelling to an away fixture. And if they do, you can quite often get rifts in the group where people are a little bit annoyed, let's say, that they're travelling and they know that they're going to be left in the stand, and it's almost a wasted weekend for them when they may have stayed at the training ground and done a bit of extra training. So yeah, he made the decision to take 25 men home and away, and it worked fantastically. He had a great group that bought into that, and I believe that move is part of the reason why we got out of the predicament we're in. But it was a very bold move, and I must admit he gets a lot of he gets quite a bit of stick, Tony Pulis, but he was fantastic manager, especially when I worked under him.
That is very bold, Glenn, in terms of, because I've heard of players saying they don't want to be, you know, just another body. That's one of the worst things that, you know, you can experience as a player.
It can be, yeah, but I think it was credit to him for the group that he had put together and the like-mindedness of the boys and the spirit of the boys that he's brought in, that he knew when he was signing those players that whether it went well or not on a personal level, they were always going to be there for the group.
You're obviously now a guy who's experienced the Premier League with Brighton and also with Crystal Palace as well. But what's your feeling in terms of seven games in, where things stand and everything else? Because it's been a bit of a strange few weeks in terms of the opening games. A lot of clubs have done worse than expected. A lot of clubs have done better than expected. Do you think this whole thing is a bit of a kind of strange mix?
Are we talking about Brighton, or are we talking about...
No, not Brighton. No, just generally, Glenn. Yeah. Just generally.
Well, I think, obviously, I don't think that people expected City to come unstuck as many times as they have already. And for Liverpool to be leading the race so quickly. But then you look at the other sort of... Big Six, and I mean, I don't think anyone expected Tottenham to start how they've started. Chelsea have started reasonably well, I think, especially with the predicament they're in, obviously with the transfer ban. But the way I look at the Chelsea scenario is that I feel that it could be a real big moment in the club's history, because I look at the likes of, and people have spoke about this for quite a while now about them. About Chelsea's youth system and people not getting the chances and being put out on loan and then sold and never given a chance in the first 11. But I feel now is a real opportunity for Chelsea, and it seems like it's the perfect moment, to be honest. I mean, we've got Reece James, he's back from a bad injury, along with Odoi. Tammy Abraham's came in scoring goals. Mason Mount is obviously hit the ground running. And Tomori, who were both on loan in the Championship under Frank Lampard with Derby. And then obviously they've also got Loftus-Cheek coming back in that fold. And I think I've mentioned seven young Chelsea boys there that I really think if the club can keep hold of, and they've showed they can by tying Odoi down to a long-term deal, I think it could be a really good time for Chelsea.
We've talked about this in the podcast earlier in the season and said we think this is probably a turnaround for English football, in that after years and years of seeing the number of minutes played by English footballers dropping in the Premier League, they're probably going to go up this season, but partly because of Chelsea, but also because of other clubs. As a man who's been playing, you know, in English football for a long time, have you noticed the technical quality of academy players improving during your period as a professional footballer?
Yeah, I've definitely seen the infrastructure grow mm-hmm. at clubs throughout the last sort of 15 years, and I think now we are seeing sort of that blossom with the players coming through, like the players I mentioned at Chelsea there, and obviously there's a lot more out there. We looked at Maddison, who came from Norwich, who's done fantastically well at Leicester, along with another young boy, Chilwell. And I really think that a lot of it is down to Gareth Southgate, to be honest. I think he was very bold when he went in as England manager. Obviously, he'd been in charge of the younger age groups, and he'd seen the quality, and he's obviously believed in it, and he's taken it with him to the first team. And I think that bold move by the national team manager has spurred sort of Premier League clubs to take heed and follow in his footsteps almost. And I think we've seen a new era of English football.
Do you think, Glenn, that the young players coming through, because you've been around a long time and you've seen players come in, fall away, some have made it, some haven't. Do you think there's a lack of fear about this new generation of players, where they just want to play football rather than get caught up in the, you know, tactical and also the problems of, how do we play against the opposition?
Yeah, listen, I think in these academies, and we've been doing for quite a while now, is getting kids to get used to being on the ball in whatever position they are on the field, and in some scenarios, getting them to play games in different positions so they get comfortable in different scenarios on the pitch. And I think, like we see now, everyone's comfortable on the ball, whether it be a centre forward, whether it be an attacker midfielder, centre midfielder, but particularly your defence. And even more so, your goalkeeper, who's used in possession as an 11th player rather than just a goalkeeper in defence.
If you had to pick someone from the Brighton Academy who you felt had the top chance of making it for Brighton in the Premier League, is there an individual you'd identify as being the most talented in there?
Well, I mean, obviously, the standout one who's come through the academy is a little bit older now is Lewis Dunk, who's our captain, and he's done fantastic and he's come on leaps and bounds. I watched Lewis in my first spell sort of step into the first team alongside his centre half partner at the time, who was Steve Cook, who is now at Bournemouth, doing very well, and he's played in the Premier League for a number of seasons now. But looking at the real youth, obviously, the two standouts this year are Stephen Alzati, who is a fantastic footballer. I think his preferred position, even though he can play almost anywhere, is centre midfield. But the thing I really like about Stephen is that he can front a player up and go past them, and I don't think you get many midfielders that can do that. One that jumps to mind is Dembele, who was at Spurs. I think he went over to China a couple of years ago. But I think it's really rare in the centre midfielder who can go past an opponent with ease. Plus, that doesn't take away from his vision when he's in there. And then the other youngster that we've got who's doing really well is Aaron Connolly, the striker. He took the under-23 league over the last couple of seasons, I think, with ease. He's scored a lot of goals, and I think it's a great time for him to step up, especially in the type of football we're playing at the minute. He has done well for Ireland under-21s, and he's keen to learn, and I think he's getting really close to getting in the Ireland first team, so that shows how well he's come on, and I'm sure his first Premier League goal isn't far away.
Glenn, I know that you're someone who is, let's just say, a little bit kind of in two minds about how the academy system works. We've spoken about this together before. It seems to me, though, that there is a opportunity now for young players to come through. And I know that you worry about the opportunity for youngsters to put the ball at risk, as you call it, in terms of playing a pass or making the dribble, rather than obviously retaining possession. Have you seen a difference in the last year or so in terms of how players are encouraged to play?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, I do. I mean, that's a moment that was scarred me. Maybe I was once watching an academy game. I won't say which club it was at, but the manager was screaming to the boys, "Don't put the ball at risk." And I can understand that to some degree, but I think the game has got to be played with an element of risk in the right positions for it to be excitable. I mean, we don't just want to watch teams keeping possession for the sake of keeping possession without trying to progress forward and score goals, which is the aim of the game, so to speak. But now I think that players seem to be playing with a little bit more freedom. Younger players seem to be playing with more freedom. But as we can see, they're all very comfortable with the ball and very well. I would probably say more technical than the youngsters we've ever seen in England, apart from your obvious standouts that went on to become superstars.
Glenn Murray, we are very appreciative of your time. We thank you very much for joining us on the Transfer Window podcast on this Friday edition. We obviously hope to hear from you soon as well, because your insight is always and gratefully received. We will wish you well for the game against Tottenham Hotspur on Saturday and hope to speak to you soon in the coming weeks and months of this season. So cheers, Glenn. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much, both.
As this is Friday's podcast, we're going to go into the quickfire round, which, as you know, sometimes goes over quickfire. Sometimes it goes to even more than over quickfire. And this one might be, I'm just warning you in advance, one of those situations. On the back of Liverpool's three-goal lead in the Champions League this week, which they conceded in a very, very rapid way before obviously confirming their win with a great goal from Mohamed Salah. We're asking our quickfire round to be, which defence would you choose to defend a three-goal lead in the current Premier League, obviously? I'm not sure, Duncan, where I start with this, because I'm not sure there are many clubs who have a defence who could defend a three-goal lead from what I've seen so far. But I will trust you to tell us where you think that is the case.
Well, I think with the obvious exception of Chelsea, you could choose any defence that had to play against Manchester United.
What's the exception with Chelsea then?
Well, Chelsea are the only team who've managed to concede more than a goal against Manchester United so far this season.
But, 4 goals, as it turned out, yeah.
Yes, but interestingly, if you look at the numbers, best defence in terms of goals against, that you've got two candidates, one of which is excluded because of the midweek performance, is Liverpool, and the other is Leicester City. Who've only conceded 5 times this season, are definitely well organised. They have, I think if you look across the defensive line, you can see why the numbers are good, and it's not simply down to the 4 defenders and the goalkeeper, but in Ben Chilwell, Kjaer-Søren, Johnny Evans, Ricardo Pereira and Kasper Schmeichel, they have solid players in each position, plus that organised tactical shape. So I think the new look Leicester City defence, shorn of the somewhat error prone £85 million £1 man that they handed off to Manchester United are the best candidates here.
Well, I can't disagree with you, Duncan. In the spirit of friends of Brendan, I think he definitely has the whip on this one regarding the best defence. That clearly will be tested to its utmost with regards to their visit to Liverpool on this weekend's Premier League fixtures. And it'll be very interesting to see how the former Anfield manager fares against Jurgen Klopp. And it will be interesting, his first visit back to Anfield since he was sacked there. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can tell I didn't look at the fixtures ahead of making that brave call.
Absolutely can take that on board. But we shall discuss this on Monday's podcast, obviously, when we get the result of that game. We thank you all for listening to this, our Friday podcast. If you want to continue the debate, please do so with us at Transfer Podcast and individually at Duncan Castles and at Garbo SJ. We thank our guest tonight as well, of course, who has been brilliant in terms of giving us insight, Glenn Murray, and he is at GM17. So please, if you want to get in touch with Glenn, please do so as well. He will be willing to answer any questions you have about things that he brought up on this podcast. If you enjoyed it, then as you know, please give something back. Go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and then we can expand the community. All that's left for me to say is that Duncan and I will be attending Brighton and Hove Albion versus Tottenham Hotspur on this Saturday, which is a very unusual situation for us to be able to go to a game together. But we will be doing that, and we will give you our opinion on Monday's podcast, not just about the game, but I'm sure about most other things as well regarding that. And you can, as said, please get in touch with us regarding the weekend's football. Until then, we will see you through the transfer window on Monday. And thanks for listening.